The fifth case of the day, number 06-2972, Torzalla against the United States. Mr. Cohn.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Cohn representing Christopher Torzalla. Torzalla is appealing from Judge Randa's denial of his 2255 petition. The first point I'd like to make is that it's clear, I believe, that Torzalla's actions did not constitute a violation of 1503, the obstruction statute. Torzalla was asked two questions by an FBI agent. One, were you aware your associate's involvement in property fraud? I don't know what that means, but it seems to me that it calls for some type of an opinion. And second, have you ever provided funds to a buyer of real estate to falsely inflate the equity in the transaction? What Torzalla did is he's a real estate developer and buys and sells property, and he loaned money to a buyer to make the down payment. I don't see how, and took back a second mortgage. I don't see how that inflates the equity in the transactions. Those were the two questions which formed the basis of his indictment under 1503, the obstruction. I don't think that anywhere based on that behavior does that conduct fall within the ambit of the statute. And second, and most importantly, there was no official proceeding going on with which he could obstruct. As far as, it would have been so easy for the government just to come back and say, Chief Judge Randa, you were the judge in charge of all the grand juries. We had grand jury 1, 2, 3, XYZ, and that's what he obstructed. Nowhere was that done. So it appears that his plea, based upon advice of his client, which we find to be highly ineffective, was involuntary, and he winds up spending 18 months in the penitentiary. He's done his time now, and we feel very strongly that his conduct did not fall within the ambit of the statute.
Well, did the plea agreement use the exact words, there were judicial proceedings pending?
They used those terms, yes, the plea agreement did, and this is something that he wound up agreeing to because his lawyer told him to agree to it. What the judicial proceedings were, I don't know to this day, and I'm hopeful maybe Mr. Biskupic, the U.S. attorney, can inform the court what proceedings were pending at the time that Christopher Torzalla made these statements, which supposedly obstructed justice.
Was there a request made for an evidentiary hearing?
There was a request. I'm not sure if in the moving papers there was a request made, but it's clear that that it's such a simple proposition that the judge should have ordered the hearing. I'm not sure if Torzalla, when he filed initially his 2255, I came after the scene. I'm not sure, but it seems to me, Your Honor, that that a judge, a district court judge, should see that if that's the situation, he ought to request a very short hearing to make that determination. I think the habeas corpus statute provides for a hearing. It's something that should be done.
And then do we have a transcript of that plea as part of the record?
I am not sure if you do or don't. I would hope.
Yeah. Perhaps we don't. I just wanted to check with you to see if I missed anything in terms of what's in the record and what had been submitted.
That's basic.
No affidavits or anything are here.
No affidavits, this was filed by a pro se defendant. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them. That's basically the thrust of the argument. He winds up pleading guilty based on advice of an attorney to something that's not a crime.
Thank you, Mr. Cohn.
Thank you very much.
We'll hear now from the United States Attorney.
Thank you. May it please the Court. There was a grand jury proceeding, and so the question is, what was the record sufficient for Judge Randa to make a ruling that this was a proper plea? the rhetoric of defense counsel's appellate brief simply does not match the record that existed. He uses terms like fraud of the court, Mr. Gimbel misleading his client. Mr. Gimbel was presented with the discovery before he entered the guilty, or before he came into court with his client. That discovery, as I noted in our brief to appellate counsel, had FBI material that referenced the grand jury proceedings. It said, warning, this is covered under Rule 6E. And so to come here on appeal and say that the government, the trial court, and Mr. Gimbel misled Mr. Torzalla on this plea is just disingenuous. And it also fails to comprehend how these district court proceedings evolved. The government alleged that this defendant, and now the appellant, was involved with aiding and abetting fraud, a bigger fraud involving Bayshore Mortgage. Mr. Torzalla, getting the sense that he may be under investigation, voluntarily comes to the FBI, says, oh, I think I want to report a crime. The FBI, knowing who he is, asks him specific questions about a real estate transaction at 4718 North Garfield, which was part of this bigger fraud. Did you provide $9,710.02 to inflate the equity? What that means is you have a loan-to-value ratio. If the borrower is putting that money in, it shows that the borrower has more equity and is thus a greater risk, and the government alleged that that was a lie. And so the defendant retains Mr. Gimbel. Mr. Gimbel comes to the United States Attorney's Office, contends his client wasn't a serious participant in this fraud, negotiates a plea to obstruction of justice instead of being a participant in mail and wire fraud. The defendant comes into court and enters guilty plea. The transcript of that proceeding exists. It was relied upon by Judge Randa in his ruling on the 2255. The government cited to it. You have in the docket both the docket of the underlying proceedings as well as the appellate proceedings. I did not see it attached to defendant's appendix, but that transcript does exist, and the government made reference to it, during which time Mr. Torzalla was apprised of his rights, stated that he was satisfied with the representation of Mr. Gimbel, and most importantly, said he was guilty of the offense.
Let me ask you this. Did any of the facts offered at the plea hearing seem to indicate that Torzalla knew a grand jury investigation was taking place when he spoke to the FBI?
Beyond the explicit words of the charge,
which said judicial proceedings pending.
Right, including and then the government's resuscitation of the factual basis made reference to these other defendants that had been charged both before and after Mr. Wickman, the boss of Bayshore Mortgage, was charged by the grand jury 2 months after these proceedings. Again, this was included in the discovery that was presented to Mr. Torzalla and his trial counsel. Thereafter, Mr. Torzalla fled the jurisdiction or attempted to flee the jurisdiction by buying a plane ticket to New Zealand. He was caught at the airport in Milwaukee a couple days before his sentencing hearing. Again, on appeal, appellate counsel says he was going on a vacation. That was that's a factual dispute that maybe the district court should have held a hearing on, but that was at the trial level, not at the 2255 level. And Mr. Torzalla thus breached his plea agreement by attempting to commit a further crime. That's why he got 18 months in prison instead of, as he complains, the representation by his trial counsel that if you plead guilty to the obstruction charge, you will be eligible for probation. He was eligible for probation under the obstruction. He didn't get it because he obstructed again by attempting to flee the jurisdiction. It is true that, as appellate counsel tries to do, that the record is not a complete trial. And that's what Judge Randa said to counsel in the 2255. If you wanted a complete trial on whether or not your client did certain things or whether certain things existed that you have now conceded, you previously conceded existed, you should have had that trial. But there is nothing to support that Mr. Gimbel created a fraud on Mr. Torzalla, that the district court went along with that fraud, and that the government aided and abetted that fraud simply because we relied upon the record of the charging document of the Rule 11 proceedings. If it is necessary, this court has never held that in a 2255 proceeding, the government must go back and relitigate and represent the facts such as a mailing, such as a 1001 jurisdiction, or any other jurisdictional element. We alleged it existed. We gave a factual basis for its existence. And to say that Judge Randa and the government should have presented the order that impaneled the grand jury that existed at that time has never been a holding of this court, and I would submit is not necessary under a standard of 2255 when a defendant is pled. Again, I'd reiterate that the rhetoric of the defense counsel and the attacks on the integrity of the court and counsel simply are not matched by the record in this case, and I'd ask that the court affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. United States Attorney. Can I have 45 seconds? Have you, has your time expired? You have 5.5 minutes left, sir.
45 seconds. Thank you. I still haven't, I don't believe they've satisfied the court with reference to whether there was a grand jury proceeding at that time. Very simple. That could have been done in the lower court. Could be done before your honors. Secondly, as I understand Mr. Torzala's situation with reference to his seeking to go on a hunting trip, the matter was set for sentencing sometime in March. It was continued till April, set for April, continued to May, set for May, continued to June. He did something stupid. He shouldn't have gone. He did. And he's paid the price for going, but his attempting to leave and being arrested had nothing to do with the essential elements of 1503, which I suggest were lacking. He's paid that price, and that conduct has nothing to do with the conduct for which he pleaded guilty, which did not fit within the ambit of 1503.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.